What's good? Welcome back to the Pop Off Podcast, a conversation show about the biggest thing in sports and pop culture. I am Ralph Campiano. I am your co-host, and I'm joined as always by my co-host, Cerrone. What's popping, baby? How are we doing?
I'm doing phenomenal, man. Had a great day golfing on the links, and now I get to shoot the shit about everything and anything with my boys. I couldn't drive it up better.
There's real. Nothing better than this, and we're joined by the Song Draft Committee members, two of my favorite people to talk to in the world, Jack Turner, Skylar Riesberg. I'm not sure if you guys know, maybe we'll announce it at the end of the pod, but we know who our next Song Draft artist is. It's a little bit out of left field, but it kind of fits the Valentine's Day mold since that'll be coming in February. So you guys will find out when everybody else does live on the air here towards the end. Mike's really excited about it. So if you know him, you might be able to hint at who it is. But we got to start with kind of the biggest thing that happened today, and that's Jim Harbaugh, former coach of the Michigan Wolverines, San Francisco 49ers. Going to your guys' division, Turner and Riesberg. He's a Los Angeles Chargers head coach now, replacing Brandon Staley. He is one of the best coaches in football, point blank period. Turner is somebody who hosts a college football pod for us, a gambling pod for us that's followed Harbaugh the last couple of years pretty closely. Does this make you nervous? You know, Chiefs, Chargers, does the rivalry have some spark to it now?
It makes me a little nervous, but maybe not for next year, even the one after. Harbaugh does a great job of, like, he's won everywhere he's gone. He's going to build a culture, going to build a winning team there. It usually starts with the lines for Harbaugh, whether it's offensive line and then the defensive line. But I think people underestimate maybe how broken this Chargers roster is, because you take out Herbert, who's obviously a stud, and the reason where Harbaugh went to the Chargers, I think he probably could have went anywhere. I know Bears fans were disappointed that he didn't come home to the Bears, but they have a lot of aging talent on the offensive end. They completely whiffed with their rookie draft pick, wide receiver last year. The defense is getting a little older. Bosa is oft injured. So the next 2 years, I'm not overly concerned. It does help that the Raiders and the Broncos are both hitting the reset button as well. So there's no reason this Chargers team shouldn't be wild card. You know, seven teams make the playoffs now. They should be a wild card fringe, compete for that. But in terms of taking over kind of the top spot in the AFC West, I wouldn't be overly concerned.
Yeah, I have this theory. We talked about it last week, Turner, that if you're a head coach in the NFL, you need to be one of two things. You need to be able to kick your players' asses, like Dan Campbell, Mike Vrabel, one of those guys. Or you need to be able to, you know, send somebody to detention, like Belichick or Saban, like one of those guys where people just respect you because, one, you're really successful, or two, you're just kind of a scary presence. And he and his brother kind of toe that line between them. I wouldn't be surprised if he could definitely, like, kick, like, a tight end's ass, but he could also send the quarterback to detention kind of vibe. 13-3 in his first season with San Fran, 11-4 in his second, 12-4 in his third, 8-8 in his fourth. Made it to a Super Bowl, I believe his first year with the Niners with Kaepernick. I mean, this is a guy that's like won everywhere he's gone. You said it best. And the reason as a Bears fan, I was so pissed off that he went to the Chargers was I felt like somebody needed to come into Hallis Hall and just call everybody a pussy. Straight up. Just come in, change the culture. Like, we play like pussy so often. Our defense was better the second half of the season, but there are so many fake tough guys in the league. And he's also one of the head coaches that, does he have an offensive or defensive background? Like, he's not Andy Reid where he's calling all the plays, or Bill Belichick calling all the plays on defense. He's more like the CEO type. Which side does he lean towards? Because that'll make a big difference, like, between Herbert and that shaky defense. I don't know which way he leans, Turner.
He's a CEO type. I wouldn't say he necessarily leans one way or the other. I mean, he was an NFL quarterback. I would say, if anything, he leads on the offensive side, specifically the lines, but he's kind of just a tone setter is how I would describe him.
Cerrone, you've left having a Harbaugh as your head coach. Do you think that the weirder of the two brothers can come back to the NFL and get a Super Bowl?
Going off of what, you know, you said, yeah, it's not a finished product in, you know, for the Chargers. Such a slot. Like, it's like half the guys just didn't want to be there towards the end of the season, especially that game against the Raiders. But no, you got a dog, man. Like, he's not going to fuck around. You're right. It might take him a couple of years, like almost like college, like, you know, have his players go through 2-3 years. But yeah, he's won everywhere he's been. He's coming off. I mean, both of the brothers are on fire right now. I think that was the best. I mean, that's one of the best hires. I mean, if you can't get Belichick, I think he was kind of the next best up. And yeah, he's going to change the culture. He's a beast. And yeah, he's done. I mean, dude, they were literally one I think it was Crabtree reception away from winning a Super Bowl with him. So he's been there, he's
Sorry
done
ass
that
receiver.
in the NFL before, which is, yeah, exactly. Sorry ass receiver. Yeah, he's been there, he's done it before. It's not like you have these college coaches come to the NFL for the first time. Like Chip, like it, he's kind of, he knows it. His brother's in there, he'll give him some tips. I think they'll just, I mean, they're obviously going to be better. So it's going to be a little bit
Yeah.
scarier for the Chiefs, but I don't know if they're going to necessarily come out and go like, 6-7-8-0, just, going on an absolute tear. But it's definitely a win for the Chargers for
Staley
sure.
was
Step up
pretty
from
brutal down
Staley.
the stretch. The one thing I will say about the Chargers franchise is that they play 17 road games a year, which is just tough on a team. Like they have no home field advantage, no support out there in LA. That's tough. Berg?
You're right.
Yeah, I was going to say, just to the point where we're talking, he's in college, he's in the NFL. Like, is there really another coach that's leaped back and forth? I think going from college to the NFL, I think going to the NFL twice is like a lot just in general for a coach after leaving. So I guess my point here is just like, is this guy just doing whatever he wants? He just gets to hop around and I don't know, just try to fuck shit up, become a winner everywhere he goes. Like, it's just pretty crazy to me. He left and then he came back. Like, he's back. I think it's fun that he's in AFC West. I think it's comedic to see what the AFC West teams do every year to try to win the division. And I think he'll come in and be successful, but I think people were saying the same thing about Sean Payton. So we'll see.
Reesburg, I think that's a great point. I think the best, like, Pete Carroll to the Seahawks, that was immediate success from college to NFL. I think weirdly what was more impressive was leaving college football and then coming back when college football is going through so many changes and being able to come back and win at Michigan. And now I see, Cerrone's Ravens, right? They just hired an offensive and defensive coordinator straight out of college football last year, and it's working out really well for them, where NFL is starting to adapt some more college football schemes and just like ideas as well.
Dude, Todd Monken has been an absolute game changer. Like it's unbelievable. Watching Ravens football for the past 10, 12 years, we have never ran like this, like fluid on the offensive side of the ball. So yeah, you're right. These guys that come from college just have it's just a fresh taste, Not
Yes.
that Michigan really ran like a super, West Coast. I mean, they're pretty much just like run heavy. But yeah, you're right. It adds a little bit of flair, it gets, switch things up, a new coach. We'll see.
It's just such a difference between him and Staley, though. Like, you look at Staley and you're like, fucking nerd. And then you look at Harbaugh, you're like, that's a man's man. Like, somebody was talking about how the Harbaughs, if they, I think Bordy was talking about it last week, if one of them wins the college football championship, the other one wins the Super Bowl, we should just change the name from football to Harbaugh. I think that's what their goal in life would probably be, is to like have football renamed after their family. And I was also thinking the timing was kind of weird. Usually the head coach changes come, I think Pro Bowl week is normally when it happens. And the fact that it's coming before the Ravens Chiefs game, I thought was a little bit interesting. But let's move into another coaching change. Another guy with a legacy. Maybe not remembered as fondly in this moment right now as Harbaugh, but Doc Rivers is going to the Milwaukee Bucks. The Bucks have the second best record in the East, and they just fired Adrian Griffin. Turner, this might be me and you because I'm not sure Reesburg and Cerrone are as tapped in on the Bucks regular season this year, which I can't blame you. They've been kind of stagnant. They haven't been a lot of fun to watch. They looked like a team that was kind of having an identity crisis between themselves, where you could just tell that Giannis was he was frustrated. Like when you watch Giannis this year, and I'll be interested to see if this continues, like he looks like angry on the court a lot of the time. He doesn't look like he's the joyous, having fun Giannis that he normally is. But Doc Rivers, a couple things about him before we move into our next segment is he's 0-5 in his last five game sevens. He has blown 3-1 leads in the playoffs. He's had regular season consistency with three really good organizations that he has molded, right? Like he was at the organization when they were in points of turmoil, and then he led them to consistent success. The Celtics won a title with them in 2008. Ray Allen, Rondo, Paul Pierce, KG, Perk, that crew. Then he goes to the Clippers. He's the head coach for Lob City era, Chris Paul, Blake Griffin, DeAndre Jordan. A lot of drama on that team at that time. He did a pretty good job of organizing it. Kind of reminds me of Mike Tomlin a little bit, where I'm not sure there were a lot of coaches that could have gotten that success level out of that Clippers team with all the drama. When you think about what Tomlin did with like psychopaths on his team, like Roethlisberger, Antonio Brown, Le'Veon Bell, those are big characters, and it takes a big character coach to. And there was a rapist on that team, maybe, sure. And then the Sixers as well. He came in during the Ben Simmons, the end of that era, and the Joel Embiid era, of course, and James Harden as well. Turner, my question for you is he the right guy to get the Bucks over the hump? Because people forget that the Bucks lost in the first round against Miami last year. They might have missed Giannis for a game and a half, but you still shouldn't have lost that series, right? If you're the one seed, you're losing to the eight seed. That shouldn't have happened. Don't care about the run that Miami went on. Milwaukee should have taken care of business. Can Doc get them past teams like Philly, Boston, Miami this year?
Yeah, I'm gonna come in and just let you know what I know about Doc Rivers real quick.
Okay.
All I know, I'm not an NBA guy. I'm not even going to pretend I'm an NBA guy, but I have allegiance, like, weirdly to the 76ers because I was an Embiid fan when they drafted him, and I thought that man's going to take, you know, if they can develop him, that man's going to be, like, the face of the NBA. He's going to kill it. I didn't understand he would suck in the playoffs. I didn't understand the 76ers are a cursed organization. And so I've just seen sadness.
The Cowboys.
Sadness from Doc Rivers. So I don't think I don't even think he should be a head coach anywhere. I would hate to hear this hiring right now. And I just see bad things coming for Milwaukee. How far can Giannis take Doc Rivers is what I want to see.
Reisberg hears Doc Rivers start seeing red. He's just pissed off. I just think I think the Tomlin analogy is great. Like, he raises the floor of your team. Like, you're never going to have a bad team with Doc because he's a motivator. He gets a lot out of people. But then once it comes playoff times, like, the X's and O's are just a little bit lacking. As series move along and deeper into the series, the other teams start to exploit Doc's weaknesses. And that's why you see three different 3-1 failures. At the same time, yeah, it's weird because I think the situation that's most similar to this would be like David Blatt and the LeBron Cavaliers. David Blatt came in as rookie head coach, kind of an oddball, kind of a little bit like the Raptors head coach. But Tyronn Lue is an assistant coach who's already on the team, which is a little different than Doc Rivers, who's podcasting with Simmons like once a week. That's just some shady shit. Like, he was working the back doors there, dude, to get back into the league. Like, it feels like he shouldn't be coming back in on a contender already. He's a shifty guy, that Doc Rivers.
I mean, he was a shifty coach, shifty player. He was a scrapper back in his day. Obviously has a son in the league and was willing to trade his son. So the future of Thanasis Antetokounmpo on the Bucks doesn't look so bright. I was saying that guy wouldn't even average 10 points and 10 rebounds in the G League. So the fact that he's on an NBA roster is just a waste of spot. Hey,
hold the Thanasis talk for later. Might come up in a segment.
For one, oh, really? Oh, it might be in the Spinner Swallows. All right, that's cool. All right, but let's move into kind of the reason that people came here. So we have one Ravens fan. I'll be a Ravens fan for the weekend. You know, Lamar is one of my favorite players in the league. And then we got two Chiefs fans right here. So my big question, Cerrone, do you just always have that Lamar jersey on tap? Because every pod, you flashed it to the camera the second that his name has come up. It's like every single time. Like,
I sleep
just
in
right
it naked
there.
Every night.
Okay, so my question is, Turner Reisberg, your anxiety level going into this game.
I know, I forgot you guys are Chiefs fans, man. This is going to be a great.
This is going to be a little bit spicy because you guys admitted defeat Sunday night in the group chat. You were automatically like, yeah, man, like, great season for the Chiefs, but we're running into the Ravens now. I think that's bullshit. I think you were both bullshitting on that account. It's going to come to Sunday, and you guys are going to be the cockiest little pricks in the world. You're going to be like, Mahomes doesn't lose in the playoffs. Might as well name January after this guy. Which one of you wants to start? Go ahead. Give your pitch. Was that bullshit admitting defeat? Or do you guys actually feel like, I'm not sure about this one. Taylor Swift might have run her course.
Turner, you probably got some good points. You hit them and then I'll give it home. I'll bring it home for us.
The Chiefs have no chance in this game. I wouldn't even take the field if I were them. Honestly, going into Baltimore, it just feels like it's the Ravens' year. You know, this has just been a tough year for the Chiefs. Right. Everybody, you know, we heard a lot about the regular season drama. There's no receivers. They are not fun to watch anymore. They don't score that many points. I'm out on the Chiefs.
Yeah.
This is such bullshit. I don't believe that for a second. Look at the smirk on your fucking face. Say it with your goddamn chest, Reesper. Can you bring us some gusto? Because I don't believe a thing. Turner, you have a Chiefs crew on right now.
I'll say it with my chest. Turner's definitely a little more optimistic than he's letting on. But you have to have optimism as a fan. It comes with the territory of being a fan, especially a Kansas City Chiefs fan. Any fandom, any fandom that's been through some tough shit, you know, hasn't won a Super Bowl for however many years, has deep history, but deep history of sucking. And, you know, that's the Chiefs organization right now, or not right now, has been for a long time. Coming to where we are now with Pat Mahomes, you know, a generational talent. Like, I'm making this full circle. We have to have a little bit of hope. We have hope instilled in us because otherwise we wouldn't be fans. But with that being said, Patrick Mahomes' playoff record speaks for itself. He's 9-1 against the spread. I think he's like 8-3 straight up as a dog. So, I mean, there's optimism there to be had. But if you look at both teams, if you've watched them throughout the year, you know that at this point in time, the Ravens are the most complete team, the most healthiest team, and supposedly the number one defense. So number one defense going up against supposedly number 1-2 defense. Supposedly. You know, I'm just saying things.
We're going to beat the fuck out of you.
I agree.
Is it my time to talk?
It'll be hostile territory. I think it'll be a close game, though, at the end of the day. 3 points.
Cerrone, when you look at, like, if you look at your own team, it's easy, like, for us. Like, Tooney's probably not going to play. We're freaking out a little bit, right? Like, our left guard. But, like, if the Ravens' left guard wasn't playing, I might not be quite as in tune. Is there any injuries on the, like, Ravens currently that we should be aware of? Like, how are you feeling about just the general roster? Everybody feeling good?
No, Humphrey practiced today.
Dude. Fuck.
They're gonna shoot him up with morphine. He's gonna play on Sunday, dude. Mark Andrews.
Yeah, wait. What's up with that? NFL. The playoffs come around. They stop drug testing. You can just shoot your guys up with stuff.
I mean, with morphine. I mean, bro, it's the fucking league. They're. I mean, they know how to. He's not taking. If he takes steroids today, it's not gonna get him an interception on Sunday. You guys are gonna get smoked by two guys by the name of Roquan Smith and Queen. Yeah. Because Mahomes has played half of Miami's defense was in the ER, and yeah, they won. And then half of the Bills' defense was in the ER, and they barely squeaked out because their kicker missed the field goal. You guys are going to go into Baltimore at the bank. It's going to be an absolute war zone. There's two ways you guys win this game. One, the NFL's rigged. They want Taylor Swift in the Super Bowl. Okay, Taylor Swift's in the Super Bowl. They get double, triple the amount of little white girls watching it, cheering for him. You know, seeing commercials, buying jerseys, talking about it, tweet about it, Instagram. And two, today they hired the same fucking referee that tripped Lamar in the end zone of the San Fran game, which is absolute horseshit. I think when that guy refs, I think road teams win. Like 65% of the time or whatever.
Hey, I read that article too. We don't need to bring it up though.
But my this is 3.5 is honestly disrespectful. Yesterday I put a large wager on Ravens -9.5. I think they're gonna go in there, get their doors blown off. I don't think it'll be that.
You know, that's
close.
Only happened. The only the argument half. It's only happened one time that the Chiefs have gotten blown out in a January game, and that was against Tom Brady. That was against a terrible Chiefs team. Mahomes showed up. Nobody else showed up. I'm not saying that the Chiefs win. I fully expect the Ravens to go on to the Super Bowl. But I've never watched a Mahomes game where it hasn't been close, except for the Super Bowl against the Bucs.
Do you think it's a problem that your tight end isn't hot enough, good enough, or charismatic enough to date a megastar that would help out in your favor? Like Mark
Isaiah
just
Likely?
Doesn't have the gas.
Hey, I really like your tight end.
He's actually not. Isaiah Likely is pretty ugly, to be honest. That could be an issue. I talked about this in the pod before. Yes, Andy Reid, Mahomes, scare me because them in the playoffs is just a different team. It's a different breed. They have experience. They've been there. They know how to win these big games. But I think our defense, I talked about this before, when we're, you know, having the hottest team like the Texans score literally 3 points, they got a punt return for a touchdown, not even getting within the 25 or within our 25-yard line. If we have to score 4 points to win the game, we're going to win every game. If we have to score 11 points to win the game,
bad logic,
we're
going to
win
that game.
Forward with. I don't think Chiefs put up more than 20 points, and I think we can score a lot more. I think this is the year that they get edged out, whether it's by 4 points or whether it's by 10 points.
I just think our defense is too suffocating. Just everything. We're playing with house money over here on this side. You know, 6 straight AFC championships, house money. Nobody believes in us. We shouldn't even show up. The Ravens have everything to lose at home. Oh, I'm going to feel so bad for them on Sunday night, dude. It's going to be heartbreaking.
In the whole world wants the Ravens to win. I think, you know, the receivers, you know, Rice.
Dude, which one is it? MVS, the whole world wants the Ravens to win, or the ratings are going to be better if the Chiefs win? You can't have it both ways.
I think the world wants Kelce and them to go down, but the NFL wants, you know, the Kelce Swift Bowl. But I think I don't know. Obviously, I'm, you know, having fun and talking shit, but I think this is it's almost like the Bills. This is the year to beat the Chiefs, where they're not as good and as firing on all cylinders with, you know, when they had Tyreek Hill and they were just fucking, you know, winning rings left and right. This is the year to do it. I think this is the year that the Ravens can squeak it out. And I think it comes down to fucking, I mean, bro, if Lamar rushes for two, throws for two, and our defense plays that suffocating, I don't think, I'm very confident. And I think also playing in the bank is a different, I mean, we cause 2 delay games, 5 false starts. It's going to be rowdy. It's going to be cold. I hope we don't play a clean game. I'll take the roughing the passer. Hit Mahomes. Hit him lights out once.
No, you don't want these penalties. Take with the ref penalty, you brought take, up that's reffing take, the game.
We'll take 1 15-yard penalty to shake him up for the rest of the game. Fuck it, man. This is football. This is Ravens football. Roquan Smith is already going to hell, man. And fuck, you know who's driving the bus there? Patrick McQueen or fucking Patrick Queen. I almost said Lightning McQueen. Maybe Lightning McQueen is driving the bus there. It's going to be an absolute war. I cannot wait to watch this game. I mean, obviously I'm having fun, but I am confident. I am.
We're deep diving in more tomorrow. So, I mean, you're right.
Hey, how good does it feel though to have your team in the AFC championship game?
It's unbelievable. It's, to be able to watch Ravens games this late in January and have everybody talking about them. I mean, all I see on my feed and on my TV is Lamar highlights, Ravens highlights, Zay Flowers highlights. It is literally the best. It's almost like bittersweet too, because, you know, we won on football a month from now. It'll all be done and we'll be watching, you know, golf or basketball. Basketball. You know, there's March Madness and NBA Finals and all that stuff. But yeah, it feels great. I'm confident this is a lot different team than, you know, the Ravens have been the past 2 or 3 years. And I think, you know, and the Chiefs got to tip the hat, because no one expected them to be in the AFC championship. And, you know, Mahomes and Reed, and you can never count them out. But I think they don't have enough this year to get by. You know, if the Ravens team wasn't playing this good, I'd be a lot more scared. But I think we're just on fire right now at the right time.
Yeah,
and the 10 like, was from a punt return. They didn't get within the it should have been 34-3.
Yeah.
They didn't get past the 25. It was unbelievable. And that's, you know, a Texans team that is young, but that was also quite literally on fire.
You've gotten more confident this week, it sounds like, as somebody who's on the Ravens.
I have.
I've gotten a little
because
bit less confident.
For them to sweep by the Bills.
Yeah, but it comes down to him. Like, it comes down to one guy, and it comes down to the best player in the league. And I love Lamar more than anything in the world, but I am a little bit nervous about that first half performance. I am a Ravens fan, but I'm saying that I'm getting more nervous as him.
Okay.
No. I'm telling you why I'm growing more anxious, because I put a shit ton of money on the fucking Ravens by 3.5 Sunday night after Cerrone hyped me up. And now I'm just staring this fucking light-skinned dude in the face again. And it's like, I watched the Bills game. I had money on the Chiefs in that game. I remember the Dolphins game, and the second that it kicked off, and the Ravens are not the Dolphins. The Ravens are not the Bills. I get it.
Yeah, those defenses.
But it seems like
so
he's
bad.
Just. It feels like the Dark Knight analogy. What happens when an unstoppable force meets an immovable object? This is not supposedly the best defense left in the playoffs. This is the best defense in the NFL.
We'll see.
They won the three big categories. Least amount of points allowed, most turnovers forced, and most sacks, right? So it's those three things. And the Chiefs have not been the number one offense this year. But in the playoffs, when you need somebody to convert on 3rd and 6, I'm not picking anybody over that guy, dude. I just can't. Like, it's like, you know, when the clock is running down, 4 seconds left, I want LeBron to just go to the fucking rim. And that's really just thing with
there would be one guy I would pick over Mahomes for 3rd and 6, but okay. I don't know who that guy is.
One of the craziest storylines.
That guy's 3-1 against Mahomes.
Season is all offseason. Sky Moore and Kadarius Toney were told like spring practice, fall practice, preseason. Those are our 1 and 2 receivers. They're both not even suiting up anymore for the Chiefs, and we're still moving into the AFC Championship. The other thing is, like, the Chiefs have had
– it's impressive.
The Chiefs have had their battles with, like, Josh Allen in the playoffs, which are a lot of fun. And now every time we have the Bills, there's this history. They've had him with Joe Burrow, who's gotten the best of us, you know, in the playoffs as well. And now there's some history there. I'm excited for just Mahomes versus Lamar to write their own history on Sunday. No matter what the outcome is, it's good for football that these two guys, the faces of the league, probably the two best quarterbacks, are facing up. And then now every game beyond this will have that much more at stake and more meaning. Because they're starting to build that rivalry out.
Yes, that is a great point, Turner. I'm glad you brought that up, just because we had a chance to play the Ravens. Was it last year?
It was week two.
In the playoffs. In the playoffs, was it last year that they lost to the Bengals, or when were the Ravens a high seed, exited early, and then the Chiefs ended up playing somebody else?
That was the year. So we were 1 seed. We lost to the Titans. That was 2 years ago. And then last year we played the Bengals, but we lost on a Sam Hubbard.
Yeah.
Tyler Huntley reached the ball over and we should have beat a Bengals team, but we didn't have Lamar. We didn't have, you know, our guy. And we lost on Huntley reaching the ball over and Sam Hubbard taking it 99. Like, it was such a bullshit.
I got a question for you guys. You know, we see the Mahomes Kelce suite. Let's say like Lamar and Roquan have a suite. Who are you putting in it?
So, the thing about Roquan is he's a Southern boy. He went to Georgia. Like Roquan is not like Lamar is from Broward County, and we know some Broward County boys, and they know like the Lamar crew. That's different. So
notoriously horny Roquan Smith.
Notoriously horny Roquan Smith. So I think Roquan is inviting white bitches, and Lamar is inviting black dudes. Like, he's going to have Kodak up there, Gunna, Lil Baby, all of your favorite rappers, Blockboy JB, Key Glock. Like, they're going to be in attendance. And then Roquan's going to have, like, country singing women.
Just a bunch of ASU girls. Roquan Smith. I won't give out names. Drop her name, but I forget her. Yeah, I was going to give her name, but I forget her name.
Everyone's going to Roquan Smith.
I used to hook up. I used to hook up with this girl. It was probably like a month ago, but and her roommate hooks up with Roquan Smith. And I was like, she's like, do you know who that is? I was like, dude, can I hook up with Roquan Smith? Like, when is he coming out? What do you mean? Because the Ravens were in town when we beat the shit out of the Cardinals. So she's like, oh yeah, like Roquan's coming to our Halloween party. I was like, what? Like, what do you mean? So yeah, I can see where that's coming from. He's kind of a dog when it comes to the college white girls,
but the white girls love him, man. They love that, like, you know, the handsome black man. He's got like buck teeth, southern accent. Like, he's always talking about being hotter than fish grease. Like, he's unlike. And I saw this thing going around this week. Everybody probably saw it, but to be a really good linebacker in the NFL, you got to be a little bit crazy at something. Like, Lawrence Taylor smoked crack before games. He wouldn't even think about the coverage he's in. And then Roquan, like, he might not be like notoriously crazy, but he is notoriously horny, to Turner's point. So
yeah,
he's got some demons that motivate him during these games.
Let's upgrade Kodak Black from the Florida Panthers box to a Ravens box this week. And how about it?
I wouldn't be surprised if there's some rappers there on
there's
Sunday.
There's definitely going to be rappers there.
Some South Florida rappers.
There's some Baltimore rappers.
He probably, I mean, if there's Wale? Bad rappers, Lamar probably knows them and hangs out with them. and maybe he'll be in the box. Yeah, Mike.
I mean, I'm more excited to see the, you know, like the old Ravens. I'm excited to see Ed Reed at the game. Maybe a Haloti Ngata appearance. Terrell Suggs.
Ray Lewis.
Maybe a Ray Rice appearance if he's not banned from that stadium. Jamal Lewis.
He's not eating his
Todd Heap, like, let's get the OGs in the mix. And to the point about Kodak, you know, the NFL shows Taylor Swift 15, 16 times a game. They can't get enough of showing Brittany Mahomes and Taylor Swift in that stupid fucking box. How many times do you think they show Kodak?
They just show Kodak doing
over over doing under Lamar one scores. Time. Like, there's no way that they ever show him. They're like, or if they did a side by side, they did a split screen of Taylor Swift in her box, like sipping like a White Claw, and then Kodak like with a double cup of styrofoam on the other split screen. That would be great. Mm-hmm. All right, before we move into spit or swallow, let's take a quick break. All right, so we are now introducing a new category, a new segment, and we're calling it spit or swallow. Now, this is just your typical buy or sell segment. We're not going to go too deep into it. It's pretty self-explanatory. But each week that we come on between the four of us, one of us will have a spit and one of us will have a swallow. So this is our own version of the buy, sell, hot sequel throne kind of thing. So we're gulping people up and we're spitting them out. It depends on what we like. You know, you put something in your mouth, you wash it around a little bit. Maybe you love it. Maybe you hate it. You're either going to suck it dry and finish the whole bottle or you're going to spit that sucker out. Berg, let's start with you because, you know, you came in the pre-call show and you're like, you know what? I'm going to have to do this off the top. So I want to hear what you got off the top or if you actually prepped something.
Yeah, I tried to think of some why we've done this podcast the whole time. And it really, like, I thought of a lot of spits. I thought of a lot of things I don't like, but I have not been able to think of a lot of swallows, things I do like. So I don't know what that says about me, but
just do your first thing that you hate.
It's not exciting. Yeah, I'm going to spit, and this isn't because I'm an Iowa State fan and have a rivalry with Iowa. This is because I threw a wager down today, you know, putting hope in a team that I thought was, you know, better than they've been portrayed, and I thought this was their moment. They're playing at home. I'm spitting the Iowa Hawkeyes right out of my mouth, their basketball team specifically, and only because I was watching the game today, and they had it. They had it the whole time. They lost it right at the end. They let a Maryland team who's not even top 50 in KenPom beat them. And it was just a sad sight to see. They didn't look good. They had a player foul out and they didn't score for what felt like the last 3 minutes of the game. I'm spitting them and I'm sad I ever almost swallowed.
This is the Pop Off Podcast Network. Make sure to listen to the Box Out Boys every Tuesday with Skylar Riesberg and Spencer Clark, where you can hear more about Riesberg hating on the Hawks. Cerrone, what about you? You got a spit or a swallow first?
All right. Man, this is so out of left field, and this is just unreal. But this is something that's really been grinding my gears for a while now, and I ran into today as well. I'm spitting inward opening stall doors in public restrooms, okay? Because let me tell you something. There is nothing more aggravating than when you take a shit at a gym and you got to get up, dude. And you know what I'm talking about? When you got to get up and you got to open the door and you got to move your way around and you almost fall in the toilet and it's uncomfortable. It's brutal. In airports, when you take a shit at an airport and you have your carry-on luggage in the stall and you got to open up the stall door and move your fucking carry-on around, and it's just – you almost fall in the toilet. It's unbelievable. Just make the stall door swing outward.
I got a deep cut
swallow. And it doesn't have to be just outward. It can be outward or inward.
No, inward. Because when the stall door opens inward.
This is a good story. So second grade or third grade, we were doing this. Doing this game more or less where you would run at the inward sliding stall and they would open it. So it was like – it feels like you're about to run into, you know, like into the thing, and then they would open it up inward facing. Ran through it, ran into the wall, chipped my tooth. Bad, like really bad. Front right tooth.
Yeah,
had to go to the – still have like a little filling, fake filling there. Get my tooth filled. My parents obviously wasn't going to tell them what the fuck I was doing in the bathroom. So I lied. I said it was an outward –
yeah, no, you can't do that.
I said it was an outward opening stall door. And somebody just opened it up and hit me in the face. That's my inward, outward stall story.
Yeah, dude, they fucking – it's unbelievable, man. It's something that pisses me off. And I also do like – I do door-to-door sales part-time, so I'm shitting everywhere but my apartment. Like I'm shitting in gas stations, CVSs, gyms, Staples. Like in every fucking time, it's the most annoying fucking thing that happened to me this morning. So I wrote it down. My swallow is This whole week, just in honor of the Ravens, I've just been bumping only Kodak Black. And my swallow is, I'm swallowing old Kodak Black. Dude, he had so many good albums, so many bangers, so many good songs. It fell off hard the past, like, I don't know, like, I mean, fucking four or five years. But, dude, his first, like, Project Babies, like, all that, like, classics, man. I've just been going through them all this week. So, yeah, I'm going to swallow Kodak Black's just soupy, creamy nut in his first couple albums.
Yep, his super creamy
Kodak's old music.
All right, in the spirit of that, go ahead, Turner. Give them both up. Spit and swallow.
I came with even more than one prepared for each. I'm ready to spit or swallow. The first thing I'm going to do, I'm going to spit Gene Steratore. Fuck that guy, Gene. Get him off the screen. We don't need to cut to a ref. We don't need to cut to a ref like 20 times
in
a game.
That's the replay guy, right?
Yeah. Like Jim. So Tony just goes, I don't know, Jim. And then Jim's just like, Gene, what do you think? Because he doesn't. He's old. He doesn't know what the changing rules are. But, like, we don't need a nerd to come on the screen and explain rules all the time. Just have these guys on the screen to say, that's a fucking hold. All right, shit, it's a hold. When you slow down all these replays and just dive so deep into is it a foul or not, half the time I'm like, yes or no, I don't know. And it just makes everybody just, I don't know. It doesn't need to be 20 times a game. Sure, if we're doing a fumble review, like Mecole Hardman at the goal line, bring in Gene. Let's talk about it. Otherwise, I don't need to hear from him 20 times. And the reason I'm spitting him is we're going to get him this week for the Chiefs-Ravens game, and we're also going to get him on the Super Bowl because CBS is broadcasting those games. Cut out some of the Gene shit. What are we doing?
Well, and also, like, we're cutting to a third-party person. He's a retired referee that's getting paid by CBS. They do the same thing in the NBA with Steve Javy. I fucking hate that guy. Cut to the actual replay center. Go to New Jersey. Get us a camera in there. Let us hear the conversation that's happening in there. Why is it such sacred information that we can't hear what they're saying in there? Is it because Roger Goodell is calling them and they're like, hey, like, we need to mix this one up. Like, I know it looks like that, but it's actually this. Nudge, nudge.
Yeah, you just said it. You know why. That's exactly what they're doing.
While we're
That's
at
so
it,
fucking stupid, though. That makes it
fuck
WWE.
Fuck Dean Blandino. Fuck Terry McCauley as well. I don't like any of them. It's not just a Gene thing. I'm sure he's a sweetheart. I'm sure he goes home, gives his wife a foot rub. Nice guy, but get him off the screen.
Get him off the screen. Fuck Gene's territory. All right. Are you swallowing anybody?
Really says anything, too. He never really, like,
no, it's always
never,
like,
I never heard him make, like, a good point.
Yeah. What a bitch.
Yeah, they're always towing the line. They're never decisive. And then they agree with the refs afterwards. Yeah. It's like they're deciding.
If they agree with the refs, everybody's pissed. And if they don't agree with the refs, then everybody's still pissed because it's like, well, then why didn't they make the right call? So it's a lose-lose. Swallowing Thanasis.
As if he's omnipotent.
Swallowing Thanasis.
One more time?
This dude came into the league. People thought maybe he could be a fringe rotation player, right? He just completely gave up on that dream of, like, seeing any minutes and said, I'm just going to bring the finacity all the way to this Bucks team and just be Giannis's right-hand man. Like, part of the reason I saw this rumor, no idea if it's true or not, I'm going to say it anyways, Adrian Griffin was like, we got to get Thanasis off the team. We're wasting a roster spot. And that was a step too far. And Giannis said, all right, get the fuck out of here, man. And I love that. I love that kind of power Thanasis holds over the Bucks organization. He's just – I'm swallowing him all day, dude. He's making a career out of being a brother. And while we're at it, the Bucks organization is just an organization full of brothers because you got Robin Lopez toiling away on the bench as well. Just like Robin Lopez.
It's a family business.
Thanasis swallowing them both.
You think Thanasis hired Doc Rivers?
I think he got some input, dude. Inside I think Giannis brought him to the meeting. Like, the upper management sat down, and they're like, all right, Giannis, who do you think we should get? And he kind of looks over at Thanasis, like, I don't know. What do you think? He's like, I've been listening to Simmons Pod recently. Doc's been making some good points.
I am so anti-Thanasis, it's unbelievable. I think it might be the worst case of nepotism in the history of sports because the Doc and Austin thing. It's not like Doc drafted Austin Rivers. You know, Austin Rivers was the number one recruit in high school, went to Duke, was like a lottery pick. He was a hooper, all this kind of stuff. Robin Lopez is a 7-foot guy that can crash the boards. Watching Thanasis play basketball, it actually does – every time he steps on the court, it looks like it's his first time playing basketball still. Like, if he went to the YMCA, realistically, he goes to the YMCA, right? most NBA players that go to the YMCA are going to dominate. And he would dominate, no doubt, because he's a fucking athletic marvel still. He's like 6'9", 240, whatever, built like a brick shithouse, crazy fast, can jump high, has long arms. But the NBA players that go to the YMCA, like let's say it's Enes Kanter or something along those lines, he's going to shock you with how good of a shooter he is.
This guy.
How good of a dribbler he is. Like they're going to shock you with like, oh my God, I didn't realize that, you know, Ivica Zubac was this skilled. Like he's hyper skilled. Like he's the most skilled player in this gym. Even if he wasn't 7 feet tall, he would still be a better shooter than all of us. Thanasis is not doing that. Every time Thanasis shoots a jumper, you're like, what the fuck is this guy doing in the NBA? Like he's not drilling wide. I want to go watch the Bucks just so I can watch warm-ups so I can see how bad Thanasis is in warm-ups. Like keep track of his field goal percentage just on wide open jumpers when most NBA players are like 70% on wide open shots.
I got one more thing I want to swallow today. This is something that I think most of you guys can relate to. It's a feeling that's like almost as good as stopping gas on the dime. Like let's say you're filling up $20 of gas, you stop it right at 20. This is a feeling that compares to that. And you know what? It's also what Mike was spitting. It's talking about bathrooms. There's no better feeling than going into a big-ass restaurant or big-ass bar and just sniffing out where the restroom is. You have no idea where you're walking. You have no idea if it's there or not. You're just praying and hoping. Like, I hope the bathroom's in this corner. I hope I'm not walking into the kitchen or just, like, looking like a fool. And then it's there. And you're like, let's fucking go. So I'm swallowing just instinctively.
You're talking about taking the right direction?
Yeah, instinctively just finding the bathroom in a big restaurant.
That's a good one. That is a great feeling.
Your asshole is a heat-seeking missile, and it's just always landing on the right target. I love that. Like, when you really need to go and, like, push comes to shove, and you feel like, you know, it's the turtle peeking.
Deep down.
You got it coming. All right, Berg, what's your swallow since you only did your spit?
Yeah, so my swallow, I'm super passionate about this because I know everybody's been on this. I know you all are probably – you all got this. You guys are in tune, in touch. But I just got my first pair of custom first pair of Lulu pants in general. And then I went back and I told them, hey, boys – or girls because they're all girls there. So I said, hey, girls – you know, we're going to have to shrink this a little. I've been talking to my fashion people in my circle, and they've been telling me a little too long. Let's taper that a little. So I went in there, told them what I wanted. They shipped them out to me from Des Moines to Denver, and I just tried them on the other day. Holy shit. We got to be tailoring everything, man. We got to be tailoring absolutely everything. It's got to absolutely fit you. Changes the game. I wore them out on Saturday. I didn't stop getting attention. It was awesome. So my
let's go.
My whole wardrobe is now going to consist of Saturday. That. Exactly.
Bro, I've been saying this. People think Lulu is like a woman's. Like I'm like no. Lulu, like half my shit is you. First of all, you wear it for like 5 years. A pair of pants is $120, but you don't have to buy pants for 5 years.
And they bro, just look I'm good gonna, on I'm you.
Gonna, oh, they fit perfect. And also, if there's ever a little rip. Or like one time I had like one of the belt buckles just rip. You bring them in, no questions asked. They go, yeah, what's your size? We'll get you a new pair.
Wait, no way.
Dead ass. Because I do door-to-door sales. Ass, so please, the bro. Belt buckles always pop on these things. And they fucking, no a lot. The ass is shot, killed, stabbed. It's dead. you bring them back and you get a fresh pair. Dude, Lulu is like
Is there like a warranty on that?
Yeah, I think it's just like a forever like – you don't have to buy it. Like, it's not like a Best Buy, like,
TV. Okay. So, actually, now that you're saying that, I guess I did have another pair of Lulus but I couldn't wear them. I wore them one time out, and they got a bunch of scuff marks on them. Like, the fabric kind of tore off. Had no idea. I can bring those in and exchange them?
Yes. Oh, and also, yes, I would try. And also, every girl that works – there's always one rocket that works there.
Always.
That's just, like, the hottest one you've ever seen.
In those tailored pants, that's who she wants to talk to her.
Yeah.
Well, because they got to fit you up and everything. Yeah.
So Riesberg is swallowing two tailors this week.
Was she measuring you?
Wait, what?
You're swallowing two tailors this week. The actual tailor of the pants and your beloved queen who's going to be in Kelsey's box. What's that like? What's that experience like? Because I haven't been to Lulu in 3 years because I haven't needed to go. Has it changed? Does it still have the same culture, the same, you know, personal experience? Because I remember going a few years ago, graduating from college. I'm going to get some new pants before I go knock, things of that nature. Like, haven't gotten Lulus in a while. Got a little bit fatter, got up the waist a little bit. And they just treat you like a king when you walk in.
They're like, yeah, dude, there's, like, hey, there's, man, a, you- there's the cutest little blonde girl with blue eyes with curly hair that says, "Hey, how's it going? Can I help you with anything?" When you walk in, and you say, "I mean," and you grab whatever you want. They write your little name on the you know, like the whiteboard out of the changing thing. Like, "What's your name, Mike?" They do a little mic in cursive, and like, dude, last time I was in there, I'm like fucking butt naked, like changing into fucking shorts or whatever, and the girl like throws over like a shirt and another pair of shorts. She's like, "Mike, I think you might like these too." And like, puts them, and I bought them. He's like, "Fuck it. I mean, do you like these? Because if you like them, I like them." And just, yeah, dude, they're, it's like the Chick-fil-A of pants or clothing, whatever the fuck.
Pants or clothing.
Yeah, Lulu is awesome. That was a good one.
I'm taking my fucking pants in tomorrow, seeing what they can do.
I'm telling you.
I'm letting them know it just happened yesterday. And those things are getting fixed. I'm so pumped.
Yeah.
What a good pod.
Great new pants. I'm happy for you. All right. So I got a spit and a swallow. They both relate to the Oscar nominations. So the Oscar nominations came out yesterday. Naturally, I have to, you know, touch on it a little bit on the pod that was centered around movies when we initially started it. I'm going to swallow Oppenheimer first and foremost. This film got 13 Oscar nominations, should have gotten 14, actually, should have gotten sound design. But it is in the top 10 movies of all time when it comes to Oscar nominations, with a bunch of other films, All About Eve, Ben-Hur, La La Land, things of that nature.
Lord of the Rings.
I'm excited for this movie because if you look at the last Lord of the Rings, if you look at the last couple of years, you can kind of identify a year with a movie, right? 2022, Top Gun Maverick. 2023, Barbenheimer. So on top of that, Oppenheimer being a part of that, I think it really succeeded from a box office perspective, being dropped on the same day as Barbie and people including that as an event. I'm not sure if it would have made as much money if it wasn't connected to Barbie. So I'm also spitting on the fucking Academy and those losers that represent it for not nominating Greta Gerwig in Best Director and Margot Robbie in Best Actress. Now, the reason I want to do that is, like I said, every year that you look at a movie, have any of you guys seen the movie? Have any of you guys even heard of the movie Naiad? NYAD?
No. No.
Okay. So it's a film on Netflix right now starring Jodie Foster and Annette Bening, two very famous actresses. Oh. And it's about the 60-year-old woman who swam from Florida to Cuba. She trained for that, you know, experience. Annette Bening got nominated for that movie where she just swims and yells the entire movie, very mid movie. Over Margot fucking Robbie and Barbie. What fucking idiot do you have to be to be like, you know what? We're not going to nominate the biggest movie star in the world right now. Like, it's her, Tom Cruise, Leonardo DiCaprio, Emma Stone to a degree. Like, what? How do you not nominate Margot?
And the star of American Ferrara nomination.
Dude,
I didn't even want to touch on that. Like, how do you nominate her and not Margot? And then the other thing is there's only one female director who has ever been nominated twice for Best Director, and that's Jane Campion for The Piano and The Power of the Dog a couple of years ago. Greta Gerwig. She's a part of this generation of filmmakers, Lady Bird, Little Women, now Barbie, where she is coming into a place as like, she's one of the masters. She started out with indie films. She showed you that she can make a drama that makes you laugh, makes you cry, makes you feel something. And then she transitioned seamlessly into box office and made a box office movie in Barbie that also resonated with people on a human level. And so the fact that she got essentially discarded just pissed me the fuck off, because I love this woman. I think she's brilliant. She wrote the movie. The movie doesn't get made without those two people. And they nominated it for Best Picture. How do those two people, the two most integral people in that movie, not get nominated in their respective categories? I'm done with the Oscars. It's fucking
whoever
stupid.
Whoever is in the panel of Oscars, I mean, it's just a bunch of pretentious movie douchebags who just ultimately want to say, like, what was mainstream was not the best, and we did not enjoy it. So we're going to put up Naiad.
Yeah, they're putting, like,
because
the
it was
Sundance
so groundbreaking.
Films, like, stuff like that. Like,
and that's fine. Like that's totally fine. But Barbie works on that level, too, as well as being box office. Because, like, the movies they nominated for Best Picture, I agreed with for the most part. Barbie was nominated for Best Picture. It deserved to be. But they
did
gave
the creator
Coda,
get nominated?
It got two nominations, one nomination,
oh,
I think, for like technical achievement.
Okay.
So, yeah, good for you. But they gave Coda the Best Picture 2 years ago. If you watch that movie, it's pretty much just a PG-13 Disney Channel movie about deaf people. It's the biggest piece of dog shit that I saw that year. It was impossible to watch, and it won over a bunch of great movies in 2021. I'm done. Like, they – So the people that make up the Academy are actors, directors, producers, like they're a whole bunch of different people. It's become a little bit more various over the last couple of years.
Greta Gerwig, only 40. We're going to get a lot more great movies out of her. I love when directors come into their own like early and when they're young and still got more stories to tell. So she'll be around for the next 25 years, which is exciting. Ralph, when it comes to Oppenheimer, who would you rather swallow, Robert Downey Jr. or Cillian Murphy?
I would do Christopher Nolan first. Cillian second, RDJ
Christopher
third.
Nolan,
I think the
Christopher
fact that
Nolan's the Devin Booker of the crew.
Yes, and then Cillian is KD and RDJ is Bradley Beal. I think RDJ is really good in that movie, but he's actually not my favorite supporting performance. I like Matt Damon in that movie more than I like RDJ. Yeah, every time Damon is on the screen, I was laughing. I was just having so much fun with him. And RDJ is like this evil presence, but Cillian is brilliant. I think he definitely wins Best Actor. Nolan wins Best Director, it wins Best Picture, and RDJ wins Best Supporting Actor, which I'm not positive I agree with. I think De Niro was actually probably better in Killers of the Flower Moon than RDJ was in Oppenheimer, but I wouldn't be upset with him winning just because I'm really happy that now that he isn't Tony Stark anymore in the MCU, he's going back into big time films. Like he's going to be in a new HBO Max series that we are going to cover on this fucking pod this year with Park Chan-wook, where he's going to be like a master of disguise. I'm so excited for it. It's one of my most anticipated things of the year. But yeah, I would swallow Christopher first, Cillian second, Damon third, RDJ fourth, and then Florence Pugh naked humping in a courtroom in Oppenheimer's dreams fifth, because that just ruled. The fact that they included that in that movie is sick.
I'm surprised that Oppenheimer didn't get you said the sound. What was the one about?
It wasn't sound design. I think it was visual effects was the category that it didn't win in. And that's stupid. See, that's because insane. Like you remember the bomb sequence? Like that's the most memorable movie moment of the year is seeing that.
Yeah,
hearing that.
I saw it in the IMAX and it was like I don't think I've ever – it's kind of weird to say. I don't think I've ever – watched a movie with like better sound, but 100%. Like they had the craziest, you know, when it all went blind, when the bomb went off and there's the little, you know, clicks of the notions and he's typing everything, like the sound was actually insane throughout the movie, and the visuals was just like blowing your mind. The courtroom scene where he's walking through after he makes it, or not the courtroom, but the celebration scene where he walks through and he's stepping on the bodies and there's flames, like he almost in the bomb. Like that was just like I've never seen a movie like that. It's crazy. I would have thought it would definitely get that too. It's almost like the Tom Brady thing though. Like you could probably do Oppenheimer for every single award, but like you can't almost just like, you know, almost like Brady and LeBron could win the MVP every year, but you almost kind of have to like
give Lamar Jackson
that type of deal.
But Nolan, on the other hand, I think that with Nolan, like I was talking about this with a colleague the other day, actually, is that all of his movies I really like at the very least. Like I love The Prestige. That was probably my favorite Nolan movie up until this point. I love The Dark Knight. But that's, it's a Batman movie at the end of the day. And I love Batman, but it's a Batman movie, which brings it down just a little bit compared to a movie like Oppenheimer, for me personally. But I feel like his entire career has been leading to this moment. And I had such high expectations going into it, especially with the cast. I was like, how is he going to squeeze all of these fucking actors with such big egos into this movie? You make it 3 hours long, but it really centers around Cillian and that performance and that relationship between those two. I think if they continue working at this level, they could be the next, Marty and De Niro if they wanted to, because his whole career, I've had issues with his movies like Interstellar. I cannot stand the last like 20 minutes of it. It frustrates the fuck out of me. Inception, crazy. It still pisses me off a little bit, but I like the movie at the very least. But Oppenheimer, I have no picks about it. It's one of my 50 favorite movies I've ever seen. I'll remember that theater experience for the rest of my life.
I would love to be
I went twice in a week.
Fly on the wall for Christopher Nolan's dreams. Like what is this guy dreaming about? It's got to be the most like, he's got to wake up and be so confused and like, trying to figure it out, because Tenet, right? Like that's such a they're such just confusing movies. He's probably waking up every morning in a cold sweat, like, how does this all connect? Let me start writing.
That would explain the ending of his movies.
You want a funny take on that? This is just weird that you said that. I'm reading this Rick Rubin book, which is honestly insane. Like it's all gonna connect, don't worry. He's just such a creative person. But I read a chapter of it yesterday. I guess dreams are like a chemical reaction in your brain, but we forget our dreams when we wake up because we physically move. So for the past like 20 years, Rick Rubin has been sleeping with a pen and a pad. And when he wakes up, he doesn't move. He gets the pad without moving his brain because it messes up the dream and writes the dream that he's had. So I feel like, I mean, fucking no one probably does some shit like that.
That's
too.
Genius.
Where you're just like,
well, think about how crazy his parents' dreams have been, because they produced not just Christopher Nolan, but also Jonathan Nolan, who wrote Westworld. Like, they're just a psychotic family. Like,
shout out to Nolan.
Fun fact, yeah. Shout out to the Nolan family.
That's a ball.
That's like a great Rick Rubin point. Movies. All right, let's move into our popcorn picks then. So our popcorn picks are going to be one piece of culture that we have consumed. You know, this is the Pop-Off Podcast. The popcorn bucket is our logo. You know, you go to a sports game, you eat popcorn. You go to a movie, you eat popcorn. That's the foundation of the pod. Who wants to do their popcorn pick first? Because I have a decent one, but I just went, and I don't want to be too greedy with the mic.
You guys can go. I'll go.
Yeah, mine's probably like the least crazy. I don't know. I'm trying to throw something I just watched recently out there. I haven't been watching too many recent shows, if I'm being honest, because I'm going TV shows right now. If I'm being honest, I think the state of TV is not in a good place for, you know, from what I'm seeing personally. There's not a lot of good TV shows. HBO, you know, our Lord and Savior, is even letting us down. I have not tuned into True Detective yet. I'm excited
Night
to.
Country. We're not calling it True Detective until it earns the name of new True Detective. It is now referenced as Night Country.
Well, how does it earn that, though? Because I just watched the second season, and admittedly, not even close to the first, but, like, I still liked it. It makes sense. It's True Detective. It's just a little thriller. Like, they're just trying to – it's like trying to be David Fincher in a TV show.
Yeah, and if you want David Fincher in a TV show, free popcorn pick for you, Mindhunter. That's his show. But go ahead. I agree with you. The state of TV is definitely at a diluted place right now. But what's your popcorn pick?
And so I had to set that up to say my popcorn pick, because I'm going with – I just watched this TV show on Hulu with Hugh Jackman and Nicole Kidman, Far Away Downs. It's a previous movie that was made in like 2007, 2008, and the director – I was so confused because they had the movie and the TV show on Hulu. So obviously I had to dig into this. The director felt like he didn't get all of, you know, everything you want to portray out. So he made it into a TV show, made it into 6-7 episodes, and made a, like, included extra scenes that weren't in the movie. But I'm choosing it just because, I mean, Hugh Jackman and Nicole Kidman right there. Hugh Jackman might be one of my favorite actors. You brought up The Prestige. He's just so goddamn masculine, but also like, if you're a woman looking at him, so like a sexy masculine, because he's, you know, so respectful, and like he's never playing that like bad role, at least that I can remember. Maybe The Prestige went a little different, but Far Away Downs, if you haven't seen it, basically, just to summarize it, it takes place World War II time in Australia, in this land called Far Away Downs, and Nicole Kidman travels there from Britain and meets Hugh Jackman, and she owns a ranch down there. Her husband did. Something happens to him in the first episode, obviously, that sets the tone for the remainder of the show. But Hugh Jackman, Nicole Kidman, I think that should be the only seller.
Okay, so this is not an adaptation or a remake, but there was a movie called Australia in 2008 starring Hugh Jackman and Nicole Kidman, directed by Baz Luhrmann, who did The Great Gatsby and the most recent Elvis movie with Austin Butler. He's a very stylish filmmaker. Did it have that kind of like style and pizzazz on the miniseries where it's like, this is different than anything I've ever seen?
It was so different in the way where it shouldn't be a show that I like or any of us like, because the themes in it are a little, honestly, feel a little childish at times. There is a child actor in the show. I actually adore him and like that he was included. But sometimes you're sitting there like, is this super cheesy and super dumb? And then Nicole Kidman and Hugh Jackman come in and you're like, no, not at all. This is fucking sick. And yeah, so what I really liked about it is I could have easily hated this show. I could have stopped watching because of how corny it could have seemed. But they kill the corny moments. You know, they break past the barrier of the corny moments, and they, you know, make a good TV show.
So Baz Luhrmann also directed this. So that's exciting. That might be worth watching. Love Jackman, love Kidman. Turner, what's your popcorn pick?
Oh, I'm fired up about this. My popcorn pick might be, it's probably 100 times more corny as a TV show than Reisberg's. You know, early 2000s was a great era of television. A lot of good, like, teenage soap type of television shows. My roommate recently was flipping through HBO, said, "Hey, have you ever seen One Tree Hill?" I said, "Fuck yeah, I've seen One Tree Hill in high school." This show takes me back, dude. He's like, "Boy, I just started it. This is bonkers." I'm like, I'm not watching anything. This is Sunday night after the Chiefs game. I'm just kind of sitting around with my girlfriend. And I'm like, "Hey, have you seen One Tree Hill?" Expecting a, you know, a firm yes, because, right? Like, she's like, "No, never seen it." I'm like, "Oh, we, I mean, let's just, we'll put on the first two episodes. You gotta just, like, understand how insane this show is.
Buckle up, babe."
And so Sunday night, she actually thinks Peyton's not very hot. I said, "Oh, yeah, I agree." Okay. And and so we watched, we started Sunday night. We're recording this on a Wednesday. We've gotten through 21 or 20 episodes out of the first 22. It's the most, it's a binger's delight. It's so nostalgic. It takes you back. It's so soapy. Every episode's a cliffhanger. So many bad actions are committed by each of the characters in this TV show that, like, when something bad doesn't happen, you're almost, like, shocked and relieved. One Tree Hill is my popcorn of the week. We'll see how long we stick with it. If you leave the binge for more than, like, 2 or 3 days, you might never come back. So trying to stay in that jet stream of One Tree Hill, Dan Scott. I wanted to call it Dan Scott as a character. This is the most insane dude to ever grace the television. Just the ultimate gaslighter, full of delusion. When I watched this for the first time in high school, I don't think I fully, like, recognized or understood just how funny he is. Just one-ups himself every time he steps on the screen. He has two sons in the television show. Same age, same basketball team. One he's shunned his whole life. One he's smothered with just absolute terrible fathering, but cares about in a weird, psychotic way. And he'll just, like, straight up tell the other one. He'll, like, see him. He'll be like, "Hey, can you hand this bag to my son?" And he's just, like, staring him down. He's like, "Dude, you're my dad." Or he'll be like, there was a pregnancy scare. He's like, you know, he sees him outside of, like, a clinic. He's like, "You're going to regret not getting that abortion. I told your mom to get an abortion, but she was a little too emotional. I bet she regrets it too." Like, those are the things he's just saying.
Jesus.
It is. I can't believe it aired. There's also just some, like, it came out in 2003. So there's some stuff that would just not fly today in a weird way. It's not as, like, perverted or, like, risque as, like, Euphoria is today, you know, of, like, what a high school drama is. But there's different aspects that's just, like, not kosher with what would go out there today. Absolute delight watching this. If you're going to throw on One Tree Hill and just kind of revisit, try and get somebody else involved in it, because watching it by yourself, I don't think you're going to get the full experience of being able to just, like, look at somebody. Or, like, my roommate and I, we've been texting. It's like, I've been watching it at her place a lot. He'll throw it on here. We'll be like, "Dude, what the – like, did you see that?" It's a delight. It's so funny.
Just texting about One Tree Hill.
Yeah, awesome. One Tree Hill. That's my popcorn of the week.
You're 26 I'll told you years
what
old.
What I told Clark. Yeah, what I told you, roommate Clark. I think the One Tree Hill moment has passed, and I think if you miss a train, you gotta just you don't need to run up and catch it.
You know, Reese,
that Y2K moment's gone.
There's a lot of good hoops in that first season. It really draws you in, you know.
Like, I've heard that, but is it really crazy hoops?
Dude, the coach is, like, a borderline alcoholic, but a good guy. 500 wins at the program. The gym's named after him, so he's just a wise old dude. I mean,
that's awesome.
This is 20 episodes in, like, 4 days, guys.
Oh shit! Yeah, are they 20 minutes?
They're 40, 43. No.
Yeah, whoa. No, they're 40. It was an hour on.
It's been fucking
and
my
that's
sleep,
the other thing
dude.
About the show. It's like,
oh yeah,
you always get it's on.
It
was
on. It originally aired on the CW, and as the pretentious
dude,
asshole that I am, I
pushing things out.
I'm not watching shows on the CW. Like, that's just, it's tough for me. All right,
I stand by the vampire
now. Ralph, I know you watched Gossip Girl on high school, bro. Don't lie.
No, you did.
I watched
you did at one
it.
Point.
Sex in the City.
I definitely watched the first couple of seasons.
Oh, was that
Gossip
CW?
Girl. No, that's HBO.
That's
no, good.
Oh, Sex and the City is HBO.
No,
Gossip
Sex
Girl.
And the City is HBO.
Gossip Girl,
yeah,
CW.
Yeah.
But I'm different than I was when I was 15.
Pumping
dog.
Those Y2K shows out.
Yeah.
All right, I'm gonna go. It's funny because I'm gonna do an older or not an older TV show too, but something that I just rewatched like this past week and this week. And for two reasons. One, I'm always shocked, and probably not you guys, or maybe, but by how many people haven't seen this show. How there's like five seasons. It's so well shot. The plot is awesome. The acting is awesome. And then three, I'm just all in on Killian right now. But Peaky Blinders, dude.
Oh, fuck yeah.
Talk about a show that I've watched. I think this is the third time through. Every time through, I'm locked in. I'm binging, but I know what happens. So there's like no reason to binge. Or like I'll try to be getting work done with it on the background and I just end up being locked in on it. But dude, Killian is at his best. I think all the other supporting actors, like Polly Gray in the show, she passed away in real life. And, you know, all these different people coming in. You got Tom Hardy playing Alfie.
That was so weird when she passed away in the show.
Yeah, it was tough. I mean, it's a tough
thing. I think they handled it as well as they could, but it was so sad when you didn't know the news and you just go to the next episode and it's like, she's gone. She's
going to get spoilers.
And I run the races.
Well, yes.
She died in real life. You got to know. Yeah. This isn't a spoiler.
I didn't know she died in real life. I haven't watched the show. And Cerrone's tried to get me to watch it on several occasions. Yeah. And hand up, I should be better. I should have watched it by now.
Yeah.
I'll start it. Yeah. Turner just watched
and
it.
And Cerrone's favorite. It's honestly one of, it might be my favorite TV show and TV series. And with Killian being so good, I think Tommy Shelby is my favorite TV character of all time. Maybe only behind Turtle from Entourage. But this guy is just, I have never wanted to be someone in a TV show more than I want to be Tommy Shelby in Peaky Blinders. This cold-hearted, family-first, ruthless killer. Just so cool, so badass. Gets every girl, just wins every battle. Always, the guy is just a fucking general of I don't want to ruin too much but a lot of people have not seen Peaky Blinders and it always blows my, I'm like, you have to watch it. And especially with Killian he's just on fire right now with Oppenheimer and everything. He's just as good in Peaky Blinders as Oppenheimer. It's unbelievable. Like his character and that whole cast. That's something you can rewatch over and over again that I did like the past, week or so. And this week, even before we did the pod, but God, it's just, I've never wanted to be just a gangster more in my life or in the mafia more in my, it's unbelievable. Like I'd wish I was just born 100 years ago. You can just go town to town, just killing people, just banging girls, just like robbing banks. Just there's no laws. There's no rules in this show. And it's all kind of based on the true story, over in Birmingham and all that. And, everything, the picture is spot on. The acting is so good. Like there's no misses throughout the whole five seasons. They're all hour episodes, crazy, crazy plot. Peaky Blinders is just like, if you haven't seen it, especially you, Ralph, like you got to, it doesn't start maybe the fastest out of, you know, every show, but like you stick with it.
Season one.
There's a reason why there's six, yeah, there's a season, but there's a reason why there's five seasons. Like it's good.
I'll make a deal right now. So they just announced it a couple of weeks ago. So this is a good job by you, Mikey. It's pretty timely.
Yeah.
Filming is starting in the middle of 2024.
If you didn't bring it up, I was going to bring it up.
So that's, I saw it's that. Coming I don't know soon. If that was that's true, exciting
that's,
stuff.
That's insane.
Totally true.
Berg, I'm curious.
What?
Mike Turner, have you guys watched The Sopranos?
Yeah. Sorry.
Okay.
Six seasons.
How does it compare to The Sopranos as far as like, how far does it compare to like the themes that it explores? Because like they're obviously both gangster related in different eras and times, but like the depression, the anxiety, dealing with familial issues, things of that.
Yeah.
Peaky Blinders is a little more.
I would say Peaky Blinders more ruthless. Yeah, that's literally we said the same thing. It's more ruthless. They're more. It's just these band of brothers, this family. This gypsy family that grew up poor with nothing that almost died in the war. And then this guy, Tommy, just their valiant leader, just shows no weakness for six seasons.
Jesus,
just
you
brings his
Tommy.
Family to the whole fucking top of the world. I've never wanted to be a person more than
Ralph,
I wanted to be Tommy Shelby.
Here's where
man.
I would say
crazy.
There's some comparison is that both Tommy and Tony as leaders are all about the money and the business. And they're constantly
and
dealing with like side characters and family, you know, the mafia is their family and people that are in their lives that can't always see the end goal. And so they're always trying to, you know, think one step ahead, squash the beef, or how do we earn the most in this situation?
And I think I think a good difference there is, you guys have touched on it, but it's set in the like 1920s, after World War One. And so the difference there is, I mean, in that time, obviously, there was probably a lot more leeway with the law. And that's why they could be so ruthless. No laws, I mean, that's what leads to it being so much more ruthless.
Yeah, you're right.
It's like them a little more like Wild West, gun in your face, rather than, yo, the feds are watching, shut the fuck up.
The set pieces and Peaky Blinders are awesome. They really do a good job of transporting you to that time. Cool. Like it looks like it's real.
Yeah, in Birmingham with the black, all the doors are black soot, and they have these a lot of weird cameos too. Like that, these good actors come in. Great storyline, great plot, a lot of turns. Like and full hour episodes. Like you're not gonna, it's gonna take you a while. It's not like a quick, you know, like it's over. You're going to be locked in for a while. And, it's just so, so entertaining for me. And it just like, I want to be back there. Like so bad. Just seems so, I mean, yeah, you're almost dying every day, but it seems so much fun at the same time to just have, you know, it nowadays, like I'm worried about like if my TikTok goes viral, where like back then you're worried about, you know, killing people and protecting your family and robbing this guy and taking over their pub. It's just so much cooler. Riding horses, these old Bentleys.
Back when guys used to be mad.
It makes you feel like a pussy. Yeah, literally.
Like, oh my God, I forgot my strawberry flavored vape at home. I'm such a fucking loser.
Yeah. Exactly. And Tommy Shelby's got to kill like a 12-year-old kid. Like, because like it's insane. It's awesome, man.
All right, so you took a critically acclaimed show that's regarded as one of the more.
I gotta say something about this. I'd say that the character development is still, while not on like the same level as Sopranos, it's in the same tier. You know, it's a show that cares about character development, and you've been sucking Tommy off, rightfully so. He's a great, absolute great lead in having it. Killing Murphy.
Swallow.
But what about the, when I bring up the show, I think of it hand in hand with one of my favorite actors, Adrian Brody.
I know you're going to say,
the Italian guy. No spoiler. But I mean, when he comes on, is there a moment there? When you're watching him and you're like, your allegiance starts to go from Shelby being the coolest character to like, holy fuck, Adrian Brody is so sick.
Where he goes and meets Tommy, or I'm not going to ruin it, but when they first, because I watched that this morning a couple hours ago, that scene when they first meet and that literally like the Shelbys and these, the Changrettas, the Italian mafia have this vendetta against each other. It's like this legit manhunt going on with like rules, and they're killing this person, but then it's so good. And then you have just Killian, just like the best actor ever, just leading the whole thing. It's like
Adrian Brody's
very underrated.
The amount of times you said,
you got Adrian Brody.
The amount of times you said kill, it only love makes that sense guy. That Killian Murphy's the lead there.
Yeah, literally. dude, he's he's my favorite right now. I can't get enough of him.
I had to bring up Adrian Brody. Life. I think he's the, as much as Killian's the star, Adrian Brody's the star in everything I've seen him in. The Pianist, Italian.
All right, so Mikey took a critically acclaimed show that, you know, won a lot of awards, has a lot of attention, has a cult following. Reesburg took a show that I hadn't heard of, directed by Baz Luhrmann, starring two A-list movie celebrities.
And Turner took a
Ralph,
a Y2K soap drama.
First of all, why don't you just go?
I still have mine.
Go fuck yourself. First.
No.
Second of all, if you're you know, Peaky Blinders, maybe that would be a great choice for put some tobacco in your pipe and like sit back with a glass of whiskey. We're talking popcorn, baby. One Tree Hill is as popcorn as
That's right. It's a very popular show. You're right.
I'm not hating. I want to make that very clear, Turner. I'm not hating. I like the variety over the board because I'm going to come with a show.
We got a wide range, bro. We're like Jimmer out here.
Yeah, so I've got some. I'm going to add to this range a little bit. I'm gonna go with a strict comedy, a network television show that I absolutely love. You know, I had to get Peacock because of the Chiefs Dolphins game a couple of weeks ago, and what a tasty little treat on Peacock. The Office has extended episodes where every episode now, instead of being the 24-minute episodes that I grew up with, that it's probably the show that I've spent the most time with in my life. I was very stubborn growing up, still am stubborn, but I watched it probably 8 or 9 times. Front to back, even the episodes without Michael Scott, watched them all. And now they are doing these extended episodes. So instead of being 24 minutes, it's like 33 minutes of The Office, just 9 minutes I've never seen before.
I had no idea that was a thing. Deleted
scenes. I had no idea it was a thing either. You'd think they would have done a better job promoting it. So now every episode that I watch, I'm like, wait, what? That didn't happen. I've never seen this before. What the fuck is going on right now? Yeah, it just adds cool. another layer to the characters and things of that nature. So been really cool. And it's usually, for the most part, the extra time that they spend with characters, it isn't Jim, Pam, or Michael, or Dwight, the main core. It's characters like, I get a whole Kevin storyline that I've never seen before. An Oscar, an Angela, a Creed. I've gotten a lot more Creed, which I've always wanted. So it's That's just awesome. Been great. I put it on every night before I go to bed. I doze off to it. It's just such a great comfort show. One of my favorite shows of all time to this day. Just pure comedy. I think it kind of... It's funny to watch it now that I'm like in an office versus when I watched it in high school. I was like,
you're living it, kid.
I hope
it's like
that when
scene
I
in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, like you'll be yeah. living it in a couple of years. Little girl comes up. I was like, fuck, man, this seems way too familiar.
No. And that's the funny thing because like it's. I watched it in high school and I was like, God, like, why are these guys always complaining? I wish I had a boss like Michael Scott. And now that I'm in an yeah. office, I'm like, that would be the worst fucking thing to have an office with Stanley, with it's Phyllis. So I couldn't even true. Imagine working with these people. Like, I hate, like, I mean, I love a lot of the people that I work with, but there's one guy, I'm not going to name him. He comes to my desk like twice a day and just bores the living fuck out of me and has no social hints whatsoever.
We've all been there.
And it's just like, yeah, man. I'm like, yeah, man, that's crazy. And he just keeps going. And I'm just like, God damn it. How do I get this guy away from me? I got to find
him. I think that's so Turner funny because
the yeah, man, that's crazy is like unified code to like, we all just say that like on cue when you just can't stand. You're like, yeah, man, that's crazy. Like, God, if I ever hear that, man, I'm just like, oh, like I suck. Like I'm not
bringing it today. Yeah, no,
yeah,
it's tough.
Man, I got the sauce.
All right, no, this has been great. So thank you guys for joining. We'll be doing this once a week between the four of us, coming with the same categories every time, spitting and swallowing and popcorn picks, and then talking about the main headlines. Hope you guys had fun. Thank you. No rent money this week, but Cerrone and I will be back tomorrow with a preview of the conference championship games, a little bit of a deeper dive on those games. Specifically on the NFC side, we didn't have to touch that at all. Reesburg, Turner, worst of luck this weekend with the Chiefs. I hope they get their asses kicked.
Kingdom.
Oh, here he goes. The more wine that he's drank, the more confident he's gotten. What a shocker. All right, thank you guys for listening. Make sure to share the pod with a friend. Dial in for tomorrow, and we will also be back on Monday again. So thank you guys for listening. These four will be back next Thursday. We love you. We will see you on the other side. Peace out. We'll be right back.